It was the end of April that the junior senator from Delaware addressed a gathering of the Secular Coalition for America. In contrast to the relentless religious right pandering we see from so many of our elected leaders, Senator Chris Coons spoke boldly and personally about the importance of ensuring all Americans, religious and non-religious, are represented in our secular government. I'm very happy to welcome Chris Coons, U.S. Senator from Delaware, to State of Belief Radio. Welcome, Senator Coons.
Thank you, Reverend. It's great to be on with you.
You said one of your key commitments as a United States senator is to secular government. Tell our listeners what you mean by that, please.
Part of why it was important to me to speak to the Secular Coalition was to continue to work through how I see my challenge and opportunity as a senator. I personally am a divinity school graduate, someone for whom faith has meant a great deal in my life and my family's life. And I understand it as having been the source of much of the inspiration, the calling, if you will, for me to go into public service. But at the same time, I recognize as an elected official in a democracy, which going back to its very founding, recognized that freedom of conscience, that the freedom to believe in whatever a faith tradition you choose, or to have no faith tradition, to instead believe in the possibilities of ethical living and of good government rooted in humanist principles, is an important part of my role. So what I try to do, Reverend, is to both, when appropriate, share with audiences about my own values, my own faith, and how it is, and challenges me in public service, while doing so in a way that respects and includes and lifts up those who come to their role in public life or who come to their role in citizenship from a secular or a humanist perspective, as well as from the very wide range of faiths that make America so rich and so strong.
You know, it often feels like lawmakers are eager to talk about their conservative Christian beliefs, if that's where they come from, but we really don't hear from many of the others, those who hold the kind of beliefs you hold. Senator, is that skewed by media coverage, or is it a fear of the strength of the religious right, or what is it, do you think?
Well, I think that our nation, for a long time, had leaders, elected leaders nationally and locally, who spoke sparingly, if at all, about their personal faith. If you go back and read about what presidents had to say, for example, up to Eisenhower, they really spoke rarely, if at all, about their personal faith experience or the values that moved them to service. But in the last 30 years, since the rise of the religious right and the moral majority, there's been a fairly persistent and loud active engagement in politics from the Christian conservative right, who cited their agenda, their legislative agenda, as being rooted in their reading of the Bible and their understanding of Christian tradition. You're absolutely right that one of the key missing voices in American politics has been progressive Christians, progressive Jews, those who are progressive, but where that attitude and orientation is rooted in their faith tradition. When I've spoken up in different settings, going back to law school or divinity school as a progressive Christian, see heads turn and people's eyes widen because they're not familiar with the idea that you can read the Bible, be a believing Christian, and hold politically progressive views. I think that also has led to a real disconnect between those who are politically progressive and those who are people of faith. And so the Secular Coalition, with whom I was speaking at this conference, takes many of the same progressive views, particularly on social issues, that I do, yet assumes that anyone who's a practicing Christian would not share those views. And that's because one particular perspective on biblical interpretation, one particular perspective on the political agenda of Christianity has been dominant and has been heavily profiled in the media, whereas a progressive Christian view has been relatively absent.
You know, I identify so closely with the experience you shared. I think in that speech, you showed about how painful it was for you personally to be really less than welcome in the progressive community as a student because you identified as a person of faith. What's the cost of that kind of either-or thinking in our society?
Well, I think the experience of seeing the religious right as the only representative of the very wide range of views of those who are people of faith, first, and second, not knowing our history. In the American Republic, in our history, most of the progressive social movements, whether it's for labor rights or for the revolution, whether it was for changes in protecting the environment or it was for civil rights, preaching and engagement and activism by the faith community have been absolutely essential to moving those initiatives forward. And those that activism, that engagement, whether in the social gospel or in the civil rights movement, was rooted in a particular reading of Scripture, whether the Hebrew Scriptures or the Christian Scriptures, whether rooted in the Jewish faith or the Christian faith. There is a deep reservoir of sources for progressive thinking and activism in Scripture, but that's not as well and widely known as I think it should be. And thus, often those who are politically engaged and progressive think that the only way to come to a progressive position is from a humanist understanding.
We worry a lot about how religious liberty has been hijacked by the religious right and how that language is being used in all kinds of situations where it's simply not accurate. What we are now hearing as religious liberty, I don't identify as religious liberty. Do you have a definition of real religious liberty that you could share with us?
You know, you raise a very important and thorny issue, and I don't have a concise, simple definition of religious liberty, but you give me another good challenge, Pastor, and I appreciate that, because this is something that's been at issue in a number of bills and legislative contests in this Congress and in the Congress that just ended, as we've wrestled with how to be fully inclusive, for example, of LGBT Americans, and yet respect the religious principles and practices of those faith traditions that do not respect a tolerant and inclusive view of gay and lesbian Americans. That's been a very difficult issue, and one where, to your point, religious liberty has been used as the reason for why there should be an exemption from otherwise broadly applicable civil rights laws. This is a contest that's got real bite and where the edges have been more sharply formed recently and where I agree with you, we need a clearer, cleaner, and more concise definition of what religious liberty means for those of us who also see federal action in the advancement of civil liberties and civil rights as an important part of the progressive agenda.
You know, Senator, I come from the Baptist tradition, and usually as soon as I say that, people stiffen their backs and say, we can't trust you. But I happen to hold the same view you do, that if you really are concerned about democracy and about religion, then a secular government is precisely what we need to maintain that. How do we get people to understand that?
Well, it's a challenging conversation. Talking about faith and talking about the role of faith in public life is difficult. I've been struck at how many senators, Republicans and Democrats, reached out to me personally after my address to the Secular Coalition and how many of them conveyed that they weren't willing to have the same discussion. And in several cases, it's led to very positive conversations with senators. It would surprise you how many senators and from how wide a range of views and backgrounds. They're convinced that the American people don't want to hear from senators or House members or presidents on issues of faith other than in sort of purely ceremonial or safe settings. And I think we owe it to the folks who hire us to serve them and work for them in Washington to be clear about our assumptions, our values, so they can judge how they reflect their priorities. And at the end of the day, I think a very wide range of Americans actually want a secular government, a government that is not advancing the doctrinal interests of any particular religious sect or creed. But that takes some work. That takes helping folks grasp what the alternative would look like, and that takes moving past the safe and the comfortable and the symbolic and moving into the practical and the tactical. And those are tough conversations, and I often think elected officials shy away from them because that upsets people. It drags into light a conversation about issues that are often ones that folks would prefer to be left unstated or unaddressed.
You know, I'm actually thrilled to hear you say that you heard a lot of affirmation for that speech and that there are many other lawmakers who feel that same way. What advice do you have for listeners to this show and voters who really do want a society that's welcoming to everyone's beliefs, where freedom of religion and freedom from religion are truly protected?
Well, I think I would urge them, to look at the foundations of our country and what makes it unique, what makes it special. It's not that it is a Christian nation, as some would assert. It's not that it is chosen by God to be sort of the vessel of a particular view of his role in history. It is instead that we've chosen to be a place where families and individuals can come and pursue and strengthen and assert their own conscience, own the faith tradition, or their own ability to engage in public life independent of any faith tradition. That's a really critical piece of the American experiment. And if you go back to the writings of the founders and you go back to how this debate was carried through at the very beginning of our nation, I think grasping that as an essential part, that freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, is the foundational point. Then we can move forward and say each of us has our own understanding of what is the purpose of our nation. And the ability to have that debate, to be a nation of people who practice, who worship, and who believe, and yet also have a free and open debate where the government isn't picking sides, the government isn't advancing a particular religious or non-religious agenda. That's definitional. That's foundational. And having them be better grounded in that tradition, in that history, and in why that is in some ways unusual in world history and admirable and worthy of advancement, that's, I think, where we start. And then we can begin to have a real conversation about what we can mean for the rest of the world.
The video of Senator Coons' Secular Coalition speech is available at stateofbelief.com, and I want to urge everyone to watch it and share it as far and as wide as possible. Senator Coons, please keep doing what you're doing. I can't tell you how much pride I feel in hearing a senator say what you've said, realizing that that is the integrity of religious expression, but also a respect for the Constitution and the kind of integrity supportive of democracy, the democracy that we so badly need. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you, Reverend. Great to be with you. I hope I get a chance to meet you in person at some point soon.